I was invited for this, but this is not the reality. And gender dynamics in my country don't work like that. And we have to take that into consideration. Because otherwise, who are we doing this for? Are we doing this for the people there, or are we doing this for ourselves? Hello there. Welcome to episode number one of Minding the Gap, Conversation on Gender. My name is Kausar Lanani, and I'm working as a policy officer in the Peace, Security and Resilience team at ECDPN. And today I'm with...
Miles Halsinger, also a policy officer in the Peace, Security and Resilience team.
And today we're your host for this episode called Are We Critical Enough About Gender Expertise? So to start this first episode, we wanted to talk about our point of departure and our own vision of feminism. And for myself, so I always was very passionate about justice since I was a kid. It was very important to me. And as I was growing up, I started seeing also that women were facing a lot of inequalities. And that's why also I became more and more interested in gender equality, feminism. But growing up, I was born and raised in France, but my parents are both Algerian immigrants. I've always had a more intersectional perspective on gender equality and feminism, meaning that understanding that concept not only through that gender lens, but also through race, through class, and through other kind of prisms that help us to understand better that concept. Then, going on into my academic life, I continued being interested in the topic and researching it. And now also in my professional life, I continue to try to know more about it and now about gender expertise. What about you, Mael? What got you into feminism? What was your point of departure?
Yeah, it's a bit similar to you in the sense that my interest for gender equality and feminism has really come from my personal experience, especially when I was a teenager, you know, issues around body image and feeling that women were objectified. And so that interest kind of kept developing into my professional life. And now at ECDPM, I'm really the go-to person looking at gender in my team.
Before we start, we just wanted to let you know that the views in this episode are our own and not necessarily ECDPM's. And we also want to acknowledge that there are very different types of feminism that exist. And talking about feminism and gender, we cannot miss talking about, of course, gender expertise. Can you tell us a bit more about that, Maya?
Yeah, so what is gender expertise? I think to help us there, we can go back to how this whole conversation started. We found this very interesting article by Rahel Kunz and Isabeth Prugl called Gender Experts and Gender Expertise, which kind of got us thinking. And so gender expertise doesn't really have one consensual definition, but we can look at three main aspects when we try to define it. The first is specific knowledge. So to have specific knowledge about gender dynamics, gender norms, and how they impact our society and our work. The second point is the ability to link that knowledge about gender to policy processes and understand how policies could better promote gender equality. And then the third is practical skills. So gender experts are supposed to be providing research or advisory services to their organization. But here, what's really key, I think, when looking at this topic is to understand a bit better why it matters. Why is this an important topic that we would make a whole podcast about?
We see that more and more young professionals are attracted to this field, and young women are attracted to this field. So one of the main points why it is important is because gender expertise is a contentious concept with various implications. And that's very important to note. And today we see that in a lot of organizations, we rely solely on gender experts and we silo them a bit on that topic and without taking into consideration the wider concept of gender equality. So to guide our discussion today and to dive deeper into gender expertise, We're going to ask ourselves two main questions. The first one is, what tensions and challenges surround the concept and practice of gender expertise? And we will develop that in the first part. And the second one is, how can we improve the situation and the current situation? So what are those tensions? What are those challenges? Mel, can you tell us an example of a tension that you have in mind or a challenge?
I think the first challenge is actually a risk. The risk that the way we approach gender as gender experts, so to say, that this is going to undermine feminism, which is the whole reason why we are doing this in the first place very often. As a feminist, I want to work on gender topics and become a gender expert in a way. But why would gender experts undermine feminism? I think the idea here is that feminism is an inherently political project because it's about changing society in very profound ways. It's about looking at the power structures that define our society and how certain groups are systematically excluded. So women, but also other minorities, for example, racial minorities, people with different sexual orientations and gender identities. So there, if we want to start addressing this, which is the goal of feminism, you have to have this sort of long-term political engagement. But what we see with gender experts is that we are a bit, in a way, limited by the context we are working in and the fact that very often, for instance, we are working on short-term projects that really don't allow us to start, you know, addressing the issues.
And on that, would you have an example to share?
Yeah, so an example would be projects that are all about women's economic empowerment. These are projects that usually provide training to a small number of women, and the whole goal is to empower them. But then if these women don't have access to land rights, if they don't have access to the formal banking system, if they cannot access finance, the impact that this project is going to have is ultimately very limited. And I think as researchers working in development cooperation, we see this all the time, right? That projects have big ambitions, but at the end of the day, they achieve very little.
You know, having this big ambitious project with not really a lot of results is something that definitely transfers also in gender expertise. And something also that for me, I think, is one of the main challenges is the tension that exists between the knowledge of gender dynamics or the gender context that we can have going into a project. So to explain this very simply, if we start a project, for example, in a West African country, but the project is going to be started here in Europe and it's going to be commissioned by European actors, it's very rare actually to work directly with gender expert in West Africa, so West African gender expert. What will happen most of the time is that we will have European gender experts working on this project and analyzing the context and doing research and showing findings and all of that. But for me, there is something inherently problematic, if I could say, about that, because even though it's very important to have that knowledge and doing that research, having also that context from the people and from especially the woman living there, knowing the context of their own country, their own society, their own community, it can even be at the local level where gender dynamics could be different from one group to another, is absolutely key to have a qualitative gender expertise. And I think that's something we see more and more lacking in gender projects. And that's something, of course, that also ties with intersectionality and the capacity to be able to see gender not as an isolated fact from society, but it's also a political concept that we have to integrate with other variants of society and that we have to understand also through the prism of other lenses.
well, not only do we not include gender experts from the countries that we work on enough, but then when we do, sometimes we don't do it in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had an experience of a project where we really wanted to work with gender expert from the country. But then when it came to the organization of the work, I was asked by the person above me to develop myself the set of guiding questions that we were going to use for the research. And then the goal of the gender experts would be to answer those questions. But I felt a bit uncomfortable in a way, because I thought that those questions should have been developed together. And then that person was saying, oh, but you know, just come up with a first draft. And then you can let them also input into that. But still, when you're doing that, you're influencing the process already from the beginning. And there's not such a strong incentive for them to work on a document which is already fully formed. So I thought that there we should really have approached things differently to make sure that we would have co-created the research. And I think also in terms of motivations for the gender experts on the other side, and for them to feel that their perspective is also valued, we need to approach things differently.
Yeah, I think you raised a very important point, and that is the point of framing, and how you were saying that you had to frame the questions of the research, and then just waiting for inputs from the gender experts for the country. And that's extremely key in our work, because the framing also of the project and the framing of the research is gonna actually end up being 90% of the end product, you know, because you're imposing in a way also how and what lens are we gonna see this topic with. And on that, it also, for me, it relates also to power relations between gender experts from different parts of the world. So there's not only an issue of content in terms of not being able to have content that is credible enough or true to the reality enough, but there is also a power relation between the gender experts from different parts of the world. And here we're talking between Europe and Africa. And that also can show in remuneration.
I feel that we see it a lot in conferences. When conferences are being organized, often it's going to be an organization from Europe, let's say from a Western country, which invites a speaker from, for example, an African country to speak. And so because that speaker is being paid to come, I feel like they have to adapt to how the session is framed. And there is still this tendency also to have them come to provide an example from their country, a very specific contextual example, but not really to contribute to the actual analysis and the strategic thinking around this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's an ongoing problem, where when we organize events, we need to make sure that speakers who we invite from other countries needs to be able to shape the whole analysis of the session we're organizing, because otherwise we're really missing an important part of their knowledge when we assume that that their only knowledge is about the local context, let's say.
For me, there's two cases. The first one is the speaker that adapts and just try to frame his or her discourse in a way that will be quote-unquote acceptable for a more European audience. And then you have the other side, which are experts that come in to talk about a certain subject, and this is the one I really like, where they would really say honestly and directly, I was invited for this, but this is not the reality. And gender dynamics in my country don't work like that, and we have to take that into consideration. Because otherwise, who are we doing this for? Are we doing this for the people there, or are we doing this for ourselves? Moving on, going into more positive positive things and more ways to improve. And is there examples that come to mind of more transformative change, of things that could give us a bit of hope on how we could face those challenges.
Yeah, indeed, we have to focus on that. We can't just focus on criticizing the current system, right? I think actually feminism can provide us with some ways forward. If you look at feminist methodologies and also ethical methodologies more broadly, we can find different ideas. For example, looking at what we call ethics of care and reciprocity. So this is all about, when you're doing research, to really focus on the human relationship that you form with the other person you're talking to, and making sure that this is not like they are a recipient of your support, but it's more a conversation that has to bring benefits to both sides. So I'll give an example about a project I was part of, where I had to do interviews with feminist organizations in a country, and the feminist organizations were so generous with their time. They really took the time to speak to me. It was so interesting, very, you know, inspiring discussions. But then at the end of the day, the project had to be confidential, so they couldn't get access to that knowledge at the end. And now thinking back, I think there could have been many ways of being more reciprocal. A very simple one would be to actually remunerate them for their time, because they did give part of their time to us. But there can be other things we could have done, like potentially writing an article together with them to shed some visibility on their work. And a second aspect of feminist methodology that can help is to do a research that is more participatory, starting from the very beginning to work with feminists and gender experts from the country that you're focusing on, and making sure that their perspectives are reflected from the very beginning, and that you're valuing their perspective as much as your own, or even more if you don't know that country very well. I think that would be very important. What about you, Kausar?
Which actually is often the case. They don't really know the countries that
yeah,
well.
Yeah, indeed.
But going back to what you were saying, the participatory approaches, which I think is very important, because it's a direct answer or solution to a tension we mentioned before. So I think that's very important to see that there are tools that we can use. For example, this. What do we do if we see there is a power imbalance? Let's try participatory approaches. And I think that's very reassuring, just to think that there are those solutions. Also, criticizing the system, important, I agree. But I also think that solutions go through individuals and our own capacity to change things. And I have an example actually on that. I actually had the pleasure to work with a researcher on a project in Central Asia, in four countries of Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. And this was quite a long and heavy project. That was on a topic that was not, let's say, straight away linked with gender, as other topics can be. It was more in the security side of it. We really got extremely lucky to, and I got extremely lucky to work with a researcher that actually was specialized on gender expertise. She was also from the region. She was from Kyrgyzstan, and she really took a very important place in the project. And she always, in our project, made sure that gender was not siloed and that gender was put at the center of the project. And to do that, but she was also from the region, which also helped a lot. To do that, she advised us to work with two researchers per country. And she insisted that there would be a man and a woman for each country. And that was very important. And that's why also we go back to what we were saying of the importance of context. Because in Central Asia and in those four countries, those are Muslim majority countries, meaning that generally, culturally, men and women stay in separate spaces most of the time. So it's very important to get also the opinions and the voice of men and women, to be able to hear them, to have a man and woman in the team. And that's something also that you don't really realize until you know well the context. And that's something I've seen in other projects wasn't done. And I really believe that if she wasn't on that project, we would have very different results, especially in terms of quality, because we would have missed a whole side of society. And thanks to her work there and the work of also the other researchers that was extremely valuable, we got to have incredible insights on how men and women live in those countries and how they experience their day-to-day lives. And it was extremely valuable to have that. And that's something that I was very happy to see. And unfortunately, it's not the case in every project. But that's part, as we were saying, of being able to be context sensitive, which is one of the solutions or the way to improve. And that was also a way to give voice to someone from the region. And I was also very lucky to work in a team where we had that kind of humbled position and understood that at the end of the day, we're doing social sciences, which means that there is no objectivity. Everything is subjective. We're all humans. And I think it's very important also to remember that for ourselves as researchers, as policy officers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's an amazing example of how important it is to be context sensitive, but also your point about how gender really cannot be siloed and it doesn't make sense because our gender identities and gender norm impact everything that we do. It impacts our behaviors. And so when we silo gender, we're missing half of the story. I think, unfortunately, this is still not something that organizations are taking seriously enough. And we need to keep thinking of ways to make sure that we're approaching this topic in a much more holistic way. So for example, at ECDPM, we've developed a gender marker, which is a tool that we use to encourage staff to mainstream gender at every phase of their research and to make sure that they start to always think about the gender dynamic when they're approaching a new topic. Of course, this takes time and we have a long way to go, but I think it's really something that we need to keep in mind and that leadership in organizations also need to take more seriously because staff need to be incentivized to mainstream gender in their work, and that also requires time and investments. Maybe just a last aspect or a last solution that I would want to highlight is how we can be more accountable to feminist movements, especially feminist movements in the countries that we work with. There, I think we really need to be thinking better about ways to hold ourselves accountable, maybe with internal tools like the one I've just mentioned that we use at ECDPM, but also establishing mechanisms that allow those very feminist movements to hold us accountable. So this doesn't have to look very fancy or complicated. It can be to just have regular calls, regular dialogue, to ask them to peer review our paper or co-author them with us. I think operating from a basis of transparency is really important and just have an honest discussion with them.
Yeah, and remembering that we're also dealing with relationships with people, you know, and that's part of ethics of care, but realizing that even if we're doing research, it's people's life and we have to consider the importance of that. We have to respect that. We have to take a posture that respects that. And I think that unfortunately it's something that can be missing in our field and in the development cooperation field, but especially in gender, which can be seen, as we said, as a topic put to the side. So it's doubly important to be very respectful, present, and interact with people and try to understand their context. So today we highlighted a lot of good points, starting with tensions and challenges and a few that we mentioned. But I think I want to focus here and to conclude this episode on more the ways to improve and what can be done. And I think one of them that for me sticks out is the fact that we can, with participatory approaches, with ethics of care, with also accountability to feminist movement, be able to improve the way that we work and we interact with gender expertise.
I think everyone needs to feel responsible for this topic because it's something that impacts all of us, including men. I mean, men are also impacted by patriarchy and are facing certain pressures when it comes to how they should behave. So this is really something that doesn't exclude anyone. And I think at the level of organizations, leadership needs to be more accountable, but also each one of us, we have to take this seriously.
The role of men is very important. And when we talk about gender expertise, we talk also about feminism. And as we said, it's a structural issue. And it's not something that only women have to deal with. It's something that all of us have to deal with.
Yeah, actually, thank you for saying that, because our next podcast episode will be focusing on how to engage boys and men in the fight for gender equality. So please stay tuned for that. And thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you enjoy, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.